press to reel four. You were saying you can't remember how you got there.
Yeah, well, I must have gone in an aeroplane, I suppose, either via Calcutta or straight to Rangoon. And at Rangoon, they were collecting up the ships for the invasion of Malaya. And I think the invasion of Malaya was going to come some from Rangoon and some from Colombo, maybe some from Calcutta, for all I know. Very laid on thing. So I was on a ship. I was assigned to some brigade. I forget the number of it. I can't remember that at all. As a major, I was then, as a liaison officer for all the what they were called left behind parties in Malaya. I think they weren't all left behind. Some had been put there since, I think. I know they have, because I got a map showing where they all were. Must have been about, I don't know, 15, 20, maybe more parties in the field all over Malaya. Anyway, we were sitting on, and the invasion was going to take place. They were going to land on the west coast, I don't know the name of the place, somewhere fairly near Kuala Lumpur, level with that roughly. And then the next thing that happened was the bomb was dropped. Whether that was August the 6th or whether there were two bombs, around about then anyway. And I can remember now everybody fired off all their sort of tracer bullets into the sky and all their very light pistols and shot. It was very, very dangerous, it was actually, from hails of stuff coming down. And then...
Where was this?
This was sitting on my boat in Rangoon. I suppose Rangoon Harbour, I suppose, waiting for the off, you see. I suppose it must be more or less, I don't know what date they meant to go. But anyway, then the Emperor said he'd pack in. He said they must cease shooting, you see. So, but I think they laid on this invasion, so there was no way, the invasion of Malaya, there was no way they could stop it, really. You know, it was all so coordinated. In fact, they dropped the, there was an Indian airborne division they dropped somewhere unnecessarily, I forget. They called it the stillborne division, I think, rudely. But the brigade I was with was taken away from the main force and sent straight on down to Singapore Island. So our ship, wherever it was, we arrived at Singapore, all 3,000 of us, I mean. And, you know, rather to our surprise, we found that there were 60,000 Japanese on the island. I mean, we'd never been led to believe there were so many as that. And we were slightly nervous because the Emperor told them to give up shooting, I mean, but we hadn't got it in writing, I mean. So anyway, we arrived there, and then all the Japanese arrived, hissing at us, you know, as they do. And with their swords.
A sign of respect.
Yes, right, yes. I suppose that's it. With their swords drawn. And I was told, I don't know who told me, I suppose the brigadier, to go up to Johor Bahru, which is the place at the top of the island, where it joins onto the causeway going across the Malaya. And there I was met by the Japanese military police, Kempeitai, I think they're called, funny little men. And I was housed in the Sultan's palace at Johor Bahru. And I think he'd been a little bit sort of sitting on the fence a bit during the war. When I arrived, it was quite amusing, really, because they had all the great big portraits of the royal family, and, you know, Edward VII and Queen Alexandra and all that lot. They were all lying, they'd been put away in the cellars, I think, during the Japanese thing. They were out, coming out again now. They were lying flat on the floor, ready to go up again. And all the furniture was bought at Harrods and made of glass, you know, that how it is. And I slept in his enormous bed, which I think was 8 foot square, I think, yes. With a rather small sheet, kind of covered a little bit of it. And the old Japanese kempeitai went out and got me a great many tins of, case of tins of, you know, this ananas, we call stuff.
Uh-huh.
And there's what's called pineapple, that's it. Lived on that. And that's how it was, really. And they were hissing away. It was slightly nerve-wracking. I don't think I had any. I can't remember whether I had a radio operator with me then or not. Probably I did. And I don't know how long I spent there, about a week or so. We had a great parade in Johor Bahru, and we gave everybody a Burma Star medal, and they handed in their rifles in exchange. And they were all Malays around there. They weren't Chinese. And then we went back to Singapore, got quite a nice house we commandeered, and a couple of good cooks. It was quite nice, really, and we sort of received the various parties that came in from the field and sort of helped them get back to India, I suppose it was.
Do you remember any of their names?
No, I remember one chap shot himself in the bath, which was very, very messy.
You mean by accident?
Oh, on purpose. I don't know, he couldn't take it, I mean. However, I was very quick, really. I was very agile in those days. I nipped out and I saw a jeep passing, and I got him into the jeep and got him to the hospital in about 10 minutes, and he survived all right. He shot himself through the neck there, and shot himself through the head and came out of his neck, I think. Yes. He
Shot himself
survived.
through the temple.
Yes, and came out of his neck. He was all right there.
Was he British?
Yeah, British, yes.
A 136
One, three, six,
officer?
yes. Forget his name. But I would often wondered whether he was pleased that I stopped him being killed, but I'd never known so much mess in a bathroom. Very disgusting. Never want to do that. You want to do it in the woods.
What was the situation in Singapore? At the time of the liberation from the Japanese.
Well, it was, I suppose people were nervous and all. Everybody, all the locals wanted something, you see. I suppose the army, they'd commandeered their motor cars or their trucks or something or other. And we found ourselves always being asked out to Chinese suppers. Marvellous. I never knew such things existed. Sort of, it went on all night, nine course suppers. Usually somebody wanted something, if you can imagine it. But it was all very friendly otherwise, I don't think we ever gave anybody anything.
Was there any sign of disorder?
No, I don't think so. Except that I think I took a jeep to a nightclub once, and when I came out, there were no wheels on it. Was not for I think there was no jeep, if I remember right. It'd gone. I think it disappeared. But it didn't matter, I don't think.
Just been looted.
Oh, it was taken away, yes, that's right, yes. But I suppose we took all their motor cars. But it was very pleasant for about a month, and then after that, the army arrived, the headquarter people from Colombo or wherever they were, and then we got chucked out of our house, and our cooks were taken, and we went back and became small guys again. And then I came back to, I suppose I went from there, I came back to India, Meerut. That's where the Indian Mutiny started. And there was a great deal difficulty in getting back then, you see, because it was a shortage of shipping, I suppose. I had quite a small demob number, 23, I think, but there was no hope of getting home because there was no shipping for us. In fact, there was a chap got into trouble later. It was the son of the Archbishop of Canterbury, wasn't he, one of them? It was a fisher, yes, who was anchor colonel out there, and he made a fuss about not getting repatriated, and he got hauled over the coals, rather. And another chap I met out there, who was called Wild, his father had been Dean of Durham, I think. He was in the Ox and Bucks at one time. I knew him in Ireland. And then he went out east, and he was at the surrender of Singapore. You see a picture of him sometimes. You ever see a picture of the surrender of Singapore? He carried the flag.
You mean the surrender to the Japanese or from the Japanese?
Surrender to the Japanese in
1942.
1941, 42 was, yes. But he came back alive, all right. And then, alas, he was being flown back to Tokyo to give evidence against war crimes or something, and I think his aeroplane crashed or something. It's rather sad, really. He was a nice chap, wild.
Which episode did you prefer, the time in Burma or the time in France?
I did more use in Burma, really. It's very, they're very complementary. I mean, you could do one, you can do the other. You could do it anywhere once you know the sort of drill, how to set these things up, yes.
Why do you think you achieved more in Burma?
So I was there longer. It's a more suitable country for behind the lines thing because there are less roads, and therefore, you see, in France, the Germans might turn up, 5 minutes' notice, they'd suddenly be on you. But in Burma, we had a friendly population, so that, I mean, the Japs couldn't get at you any faster than they could walk. And the villagers could run as fast, I mean. So the Japanese patrol was coming. They'd run and tell you, see, and we'd hide ourselves a bit. We had a nasty fright once because there was some Japanese cavalry. And that's a nasty thing. And so it's well worth having horse cavalry because, they can go anywhere and they can creep up on you as faster than the villager can tell you where they're coming. So that's a good reason for keeping horses.
Did you see the horses?
Yes, yes. But I was in the cavalry at EC at Oxford, so I'm fairly pro-cavalry.
How close did they come to you?
Oh, I think the next door village, I think, yes.
You saw them. You saw them from afar?
Yeah, yes. And so we got deeper into our wood.
And it was a recce force?
Yeah, I don't know. I suppose so. I don't know, really. I don't, probably. I don't know. I don't know.